You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. They're an iconic and beloved symbol of the American West, wild horses. According to the Bureau of Land Management, BLM, over 64,000 wild horses roam the western United States, and roughly 75% of them are galloping throughout most of Nevada and portions of California. The most recent migration, a herd moving through northern Nevada to Mono County in the eastern Sierra, is reigniting a decades-long debate between protecting these symbolic creatures and the sustainability of the landscape. Over the years, these horses have dominated public lands to the point where some consider them a destructive nuisance. However, others believe they are a vital aspect of the ecosystem, and more needs to be done to increase their numbers. To tell us more about wild horses and the complicated issues surrounding them, we've invited Dr. Amanda Gearhart, a professor at the University of Nevada, Reno, to join us this morning. Professor Gearhart, welcome to Insight. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, happy you can join us. I mean, this is such an interesting topic, and it goes back years and decades. You've said that lands where wild horses live is, you know, the iconic American West, whose story wouldn't be complete without horses who helped settle this area. What can you share with us about the history of wild horses and its population in the West?
In general, wild horses are descendants of settlers, whether they came off of ranches or they were, as settlers move west, they use the horses to move them. Some of the horses may also be descendants from earlier Europeans having escaped from Native Americans. They're kind of a mixed bag, you know. They come from all different kinds of breeds, and they're so varied, and they're definitely unique, the Mustangs are. Over the years, the horses have expanded in population. In 1971, the Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act was passed. It was passed largely due to efforts from a woman named Velma Johnson, who was actually here in Reno. And she had witnessed a truck driving horses to a slaughter plant, which of course was normal in the 1950s. She noticed that there was blood leaking from it, and she was horrified by this, this inhumane treatment. And so she employed the school children to do a successful campaign to write to their Congress people and to pass a law to protect these horses. The law charged the two largest federal land management agencies, the Bureau of Land Management and the United States Forest Service, with managing these horses, their populations, and their habitat. Since that time, since the 1970s, horse numbers have continued to expand. Horses are a long-lived species, and they can have babies all the way, the mares can have babies all the way through their lives, and so that makes for lots of a growing population. There are predators out there, but they're not enough predators out there to keep the populations in check. So we are here today, and it's actually a little bit closer to 80,000 horses on public lands, it's a big population.
Yeah, 80,000. Yeah, I mean, yeah, our interest at 64,000. So as you indicate, yeah, they're continuing to grow. I didn't realize that mares could continue to give birth throughout the, you know, the entirety of their life, because horses can live decades, right?
That's true. In the wild, in general, horses live probably 20 to 25 years. If they're in a domestic situation where they have more constant access to high quality feed and water, they can live up to 40 years.
Wow. In preparing for this interview, I actually learned there's actually a difference between a wild and a feral horse. Can you explain the distinction between the two?
Yes, I can. A wild horse is one that is found on a designated area. For the BLM, they're called a herd management area. For the Forest Service, they're called a wild horse territory. That was where the horses and burros were found in 1971 when the Act was passed, when the Free Roaming Wild Horses and Burros Act was passed. Those horses are afforded federal protection. Horses outside those areas are managed by other entities, such as State Department of Agriculture or the tribe. Those horses are considered feral. They are not protected under that act.
You know, given that obviously horses are not aware of borders or state or federal jurisdictions, you know, who is ultimately responsible for overseeing these horses, and what are some of the biggest challenges that they face in managing them as they continue to grow these numbers?
The ultimate responsibility of the wild horses, or horses that are off of those territories but originally came from those designated areas, lies with the Bureau of Land Management and U.S. Forest Service. The BLM has responsibility for about 80% of them, and the Forest Service roughly about 20% of them. You are absolutely correct that horses pay zero attention to administrative boundaries. And so it becomes a little bit more complicated once they're off of those designated areas. If they were originally descended from the protected horses, the agencies, those federal land management agencies, retain the responsibility. In Nevada, there's sort of a unique situation with the Virginia Range herd, which is actually managed by the Nevada Department of Agriculture. So it just becomes a little more complicated depending on where they were from and where they are now.
Yeah, and this issue of wild horses has become contentious in Northern and Eastern California, as well as in Nevada as well. Are you able to just explain and give us a history lesson over the years and decades why these animals have become a flashpoint for controversy and why this issue is so complicated?
The horse is second in popularity only to the dog with the American public. They are an iconic symbol of the West, as you stated when we first began this conversation, and the American public loves horses. As populations have grown, it has become contentious about how those populations should be managed. Traditionally, the government, the BLM and the Forest Service, would gather horses, either using horseback originally and then eventually graduating to helicopters. Helicopters are less stressful on both domestic horses and wild horses. And there's definitely contentions about that. Some people do not like the use of helicopters. Some people believe that the gather and removal cycle only perpetuates this high population growth. Some groups believe that there are alternatives out there, such as immunocontraceptive vaccinations that prevent mares from getting pregnant.
Oh, so sterilizing them essentially.
Well, some of these are, some of them are short lasting, some of them are longer lasting. There's a variety of them out there. The most well-known ones are pretty short acting. They're effective for about 12 months. So that does present some challenges in trying to keep a mare fully vaccinated, especially if she's out in, you know, a rugged and remote area and trying to locate her again. Sterilization is also out there. There are many groups that violently oppose sterilization. They don't see it as a humane practice, even though castration is regularly done in domestic horses as we geld the stallions.
Yeah, I mean, it's just when talking about, you know, the debate that surrounds wild horses, what argument is made when there are groups or individuals that think the number of wild horses have become excessive and essentially they're encroaching on public land and impacting, you know, the native environment there? What is their big argument about these numbers?
Well, there is definitely a faction that doesn't believe the numbers are accurate because it's the federal government. And, you know, there's definitely some mistrust there that it is the federal government doing these counts. I think for the most part, though, most people would agree that there are a lot of horses. But the gray area becomes, well, then now what? You know, what do we do because these horses are, there's so many of them that they are degrading their habitat. They are, they're pretty dominant creatures too. And so if you're in an area like the Great Basin, which is kind of a semi-arid landscape, water is your limiting factor out there, and horses can be very protective of their water sources. And so trying to find a balance between all the multiple uses, the federal agencies, both the BLM and the Forest Service, are mandated by Congress to manage for multiple uses. And so they have to consider not just horses, but all these other uses out there as well. And so that definitely is a challenge for them. And balancing all those uses is complicated.
Yeah, to say the least. Okay, so that brings me to the San Francisco Chronicle article recently, and they published a story about a herd of wild horses who recently, or that recently, migrated from northern Nevada to eastern California in Mono County in the Levining area. What can you tell us about this migration?
I am not totally familiar with that area in particular, but I know a few of the basics. The horses had originally come from a joint management area, which means that both the Forest Service and the BLM have responsibilities there, called Montgomery Pass. For many years, that population seemed to be relatively stable. Nobody really knows exactly why. There's theories bandied about whether it was predation or something else. In recent years, that population has started growing for whatever reason. That's not really well understood. And as they started growing, they start expanding. And so that's why the horses are now being seen in that Mono Lake area, is because they have expanded down now into that basin. Were they seeking forage? Were they seeking water? Were they seeking respite from predators? We don't know. But here they are, and they've now found a new source of water and forage, and so they're going to continue to expand as well.
Are there specific or examples of native species, you know, whether it's vegetation or other animals that are impacted, say, given that you say that wild horses, these herds are pretty dominant and obviously understand very protective over precious resources like water?
There are examples out there. There was a paper published about horses driving off pronghorn. That was some research that came out of Sheldon National Wildlife Refuge. And there's been research more recently, that has showed that sage grouse populations are negatively impacted when horses are over their maximum appropriate management level, which is the maximum number that the federal agencies have determined that the land can support.
Hmm. How does climate change play a role in this specific issue of wild horses?
Absolutely, it plays a role. As we enter into these more erratic climates, and particularly in the Great Basin, where our precipitation is changing from a snow melt, a snow regime, more to a rain regime, our groundwater is becoming more scarce. These springs and that support all kinds of wildlife out in the rangelands are really fragile systems. And as we lose that to drying, it becomes detrimental to everything out there, plants, animals, and even us as humans, to be honest.
Hmm. On the flip side, I was reading a Sacramento Bee article where they recently spoke with a horse behavior researcher who suggested that their grazing habits in California could help reduce the intensity of wildfires in California. As a rangeland scientist, have you seen any evidence of this based on your experience with wild horses?
I think that the notion is a really, attractive one, especially given the intensity and the volume of fires that California has had in the last few years. Unfortunately, there are two complicating factors to this. And one of them is that when a horse has grazed an area enough to make a difference for the fire, it's harmed it ecologically at that point. The second is that the federal land management agencies are restricted in their management of horses. And so it would actually be contraindicated by the act for the federal land management agencies to allow horses to graze that way, because they would have to manage them. So, for example, the way the federal land management agencies manage livestock grazing is that they can control the timing, the intensity, the duration, and the numbers, and they can move them using either pastures or water sources or feed or something. So they manage that. They're not allowed to do that according to the Wild Horse and Burro Act. And so they don't have the tool to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a California nonprofit which has filed lawsuits against Bureau of Land Management, BLM, to stop the roundup of wild horses. I think the recent one was in Southern Oregon. I mean, they say that this is illegal. What arguments are made from these nonprofits and organizations that want to stop these roundups by BLM?
There's a very broad spectrum of views about the roundups. Some groups are vehemently opposed to these roundups. Others are just, we don't like them. some of the groups believe that the census numbers are incorrect, that there's fewer animals out there than the federal government implies. Some of them just would like to see more horses on the landscape and either don't fully understand the ecological consequences that come with that, or that it doesn't agree with their viewpoint. And so they would not like to see any more of these horses mm-hmm. gathered.
Finally, I mean, this is pretty timely, this conversation, because you recently returned from a summit in Utah where representatives with federal agencies, wild horse advocates, academics like yourself met to discuss potential solutions to the management of wild horses. Did you leave with optimism that there can be a situation, a reality where wild horses, the environment, can coexist in the future?
This was not the first summit that has happened. It's the first one I was able to attend. And just from the things that I've been told by past participants, that this was probably the best one that has happened so far. We did breakout rooms to talk about potential solutions. And it was really heartening to hear, at least in my room that I was facilitating, it was really heartening to hear that people had ideas and that we were able to help people articulate those things. Sometimes, for example, advocates will say, we want more humane treatment, but what does that look like? If I'm a government manager, how can I accommodate that? And so being able to help people walk through those was really good. And honestly, we got a long ways to go, but I am optimistic.
Dr. Gearhart, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Dr. Amanda Gearhart is a professor at the University of Nevada, Reno, discussing Nevada and California's wild horse population. Still ahead, the Pacific Standard Jazz Orchestra debuts this weekend along the Sacramento waterfront with a modern twist on classics. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.